Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Back to the worst year ever. My name's Katie Stoll.
Oh. My name isn't Katie Stoll. So there. What are you gonna do about that, Katie?
I'm gonna file a complaint in a court of law.
Yeah.
Fighting already. Oh, geez. Oh, heck, guys. Oh, geez.
Jeez.
Well, hi, that's Cody. Yep. Cody. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. Robert. Talking to you all from the anarchist jurisdiction of Portland, Oregon.
Not to be confused with the anarchist jurisdiction of Seattle, Washington.
No, or New York City. Very York exciting City, yeah. Week for the anarchist movement.
After
decades of struggle,
they did it.
A region yeah. of some 26 million people, and the federal government has surrendered. So, very exciting times to be an anarchist.
Mm-hmm. Completely different world that we live in every single week.
Yeah. Frustrating that there's still all of these police officers on the street. I didn't expect that in my anarchist jurisdiction.
Huh. It's confusing.
I didn't expect there to be jurisdictions in my anarchist anything.
Right. Inherently a bit of an oxymoron.
Yeah, yeah. Anarchists don't believe in jurists as a general rule.
Or dictions.
And not a whole lot in diction either.
Yeah.
Not a hierarchical ideology.
No, not one where you tend to have borders. In fact, that's kind of one of the things you're not allowed to you're not supposed to do. I mean, not allowed.
Like if there is like a report about like the police spying on people's phone calls in Portland during protests to find out the
that's
hierarchy
a cool report.
Of the anarchists. Maybe that's like, okay, well, is there one?
Yeah. See, Cody, this is why when the protests were at their height, I would call you every week and just talk about crimes.
Yeah, it was
throwing them off the scent.
Throw them off the etc. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the call.
Just chatting about felonies with my buddy Cody.
Hmm? I'm sitting here.
Possible felonies, not like probable felonies.
No, theoretical felonies.
Sitting here trying
exactly.
desperately to figure out how to pivot this conversation into the topic that we're discussing this week. It
you know
is
who
fun.
Loved felonies? Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
Jurisdiction. The word jurisdiction, I feel like.
All of this ties into Ruth yeah. Bader Ginsburg. Famed anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
Famed anarchist RBG, the resistance hero.
The notorious. Died
spying on Robert and my phone calls.
Yes.
Guys.
That's what, maybe that was too far.
I mean,
Cody.
I don't know, man.
We're on very different wavelengths, but I'm into it. we are here today to talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her passing, the implications, what this means, the fight that we have ahead, all of that really jolly stuff. You guys ready for this?
No, in no way am I ready for this.
No, I don't think anybody is or was or can be, but here we go. On Friday, that's right, Sophie, that sigh is exactly right. On Friday, every American with a conscience collectively
tweeted, fuck.
I was going to say yelled fuck. I wrote yell. We all yelled fuck or tweeted it or texted
a lot of,
it, whatever.
A lot of fucks on the timeline.
Just an instantaneous reverberation across the country when we all saw that headline pop up on our phones. But yes, RBG has passed away from complications of metastatic pancreatic cancer at the age of 87. Yeah, it's hard. I don't need to explain what the potential implications. Sorry, hold on. I don't think we need to explain what the potential implications of this loss means for reproductive rights, for voting rights, for our future. It's all very daunting and dire. And it's messy. I'm going to be a little personal here. It's messy for me. My emotions surrounding her death. It really hit me hard. It still is hitting me hard. I feel emotional even right now talking about it. And this is a generalization, I'm definitely, but at least in my circle, I'm seeing that women in particular are really feeling this loss, like down into our core. There's a lot of fear and grief. You know, what she's done for women is undeniable. What we all stand to lose is undeniable. And it's very deep feeling for me. And I don't mean to suggest that that men aren't also feeling this kind of fear and pain, but she represented so much for women.
She was a, if when you thought of RBG, you thought of hope, you thought of strength, you thought of wisdom.
You thought of possibility, you know, you thought of like, she
got her seat at the table and she wanted to give you yours.
She showed us that it's possible. She changed things for a lot of women, for all women. But at the same time, grief is messy. Even with how sad I am, at the same time, I'm also feeling a lot of frustration and anger towards her. Yeah, if I'm being honest, you know.
Yeah,
not
probably
retiring.
It was a bad call not to leave in 2012 or whenever. Yeah.
You can be mad at people who have a lot of power over society and the choices that they make.
Yeah,
even
absolutely.
I mean, it is going back to anarchism. One of the reasons that I think there's a lot of wisdom in anarchism is that when you start building these horizontal systems, the people on top of them get addicted to being in that position. And even if they're there to want to do good things, it's very hard for those people to step back and maybe take a decision that is right for everyone else if
sure.
it means them not being in that position anymore, because being in those positions is addictive, which is why they're bad.
Yeah, I mean,
I might
look,
say.
I do, and I agree with you. I see other sides of this conversation, but at my core, I agree with you. I mean, if she had chosen to step down during Obama's first term, it definitely would have been safe. Her seat definitely would have been safe. You know, and it's tricky, you know, within my circle of friends, I've brought this up. And at first there was a lot of resistance. Like one of my friends was like, please don't do that right now. And I was like, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to, you know, diminish your grief. I'm feeling that too. I just also feel like both of these things can be true. And then a few days later, other friends in this text chain were like, you know what, I've been thinking about it and I agree with you. And I think that that's a really important thing that we need to allow for ourselves. Like, our heroes aren't infallible. They make mistakes. I read a New York Times piece about why she chose not to retire. And it's definitely in her defense, but there's some truth to it. You know, it tries to shed some light on this decision. And, you know, they point out how the thrust of her work hasn't been women deserve this chance more than men. It's that women deserve equality. And after Sandra Day O'Connor left, for a long time, she was the only woman on the court. And, you know, there still aren't enough women on the court. And so there's something, I understand how they're, yes, power and all of that stuff 100% is wrapped up in that. She has things that she wanted to see done, and our lifetimes are so short in the grand scheme of things, and you want to make every last moment out of it. But that's also kind of a criticism about like American work ethic and capitalism in general, that we feel that people have to change the world, that all of this burden is on, you know, your lifetime, and that's all you
got.
For
life, yeah.
For life. And I want to talk about that in a second. But, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor also talked about how much she regretted her choice to leave when she did. And then you look at her peers, Ginsburg's peers, you know, old men that aren't retiring, you know. So there is an element of that. But then, like you said, Robert, there's also just, let's not discount the fact that people in power like to stay in power.
Right. And it wasn't just her at the time, too. Like, even, like, when people were bringing up, like, she's had cancer a couple times. She's like getting old. She falls asleep during court sometimes. Like during that period, they were calling for others to do the same thing.
Yeah,
like, it wasn't just her. It was just this general feeling of like, maybe we should deal with this now before
totally.
It gets to be too late.
Well, that's,
I mean, maybe Logan's Run was kind of right, and at 35, we should just put people on an island.
Mm-hmm. Well, instead of let them be president, actually. Be president. Yeah.
Can I?
Well, we should still have to be 35 in order to be president. But we should also force all people over 35 onto an island. Therefore, no presidents. But we don't have to change the Constitution, which is a real pain.
Yeah, and then there's this other country that's only presidents.
Yeah.
That speaks to my next point that I was going to make, which is my frustration with her decision to continue to serve is there, but I also feel just this huge anger about this fucking system that appoints justices for lifetime. It just does not make any sense. Elderly people, many elderly people have their licenses taken away because it's no longer safe for them to drive. You know, but we have allow for the fact that this person is going to age in a, you know, and develop any number of different problems that can affect their ability to serve, not to mention just the fact that you're old and you know, you deserve a chance to stop. She never should have been in this position.
Yeah. I just want to make a point to what you were saying, though. Like, she didn't get to pick her replacement. She won't get that. Doesn't have any sort of say in it. Even if it was Barack Obama picking it, you're still putting your trust into somebody else to replace you and then hope that, you know, a bunch of other people go, yes. So,
yeah,
like,
I mean,
the control freak 100%. In me is like,
I can understand emotionally
not
the decision to want to stay in many ways. That doesn't change the fact that I also think she should have retired when she had the chance. That I would have retired, you know?
And, like, infusing stuff like that and politics and systems, yes. Emotion doesn't belong there.
Right.
That's not where it's supposed to go and what it's supposed to fuel.
Yeah.
Only and robots and positions of power from now on. That'll fix it.
Well, you know, I think that's a good call. I mean, I have a lot of issues with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, both with kind of some of her final decisions, one of which involved letting a pipeline get constructed on indigenous land. But more than anything, my issue is, is the issue that keeps coming up. It's the same issue we have with the Electoral College, it's the same issue we have with a lot of the powers of the presidency. This was a system, like lifetime appointments for justices, was an attempt to solve a problem by a bunch of men who existed in a time period where all of the lights were candles and all travel was either on foot or horseback. And they were doing the best they could to develop a system that had a balance of powers. And it was an impressive attempt for 200-something years ago. It's not 200-something years ago, and it's stupid to do it this way. It's just stupid, and we shouldn't. And I hate that that doesn't matter and never will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a wild idea, but maybe the best idea for a nation ever wasn't thought up by these goons a few hundred years ago.
We keep going back to that.
Wasn't thought up by a group of men, 30% of whom shat themselves to death?
Yeah.
Statistically?
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with everything that you guys are saying. For sure. I'm just still, of course, not every decision she made. There's plenty of things that can be broken down and you know, criticized. But she did do an undeniable.
It's a huge loss.
It's a huge loss. She's done so much for women, for equality, all of that. I'm sure most of you know this, but her dying request was that my most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed. And yet within hours, Mitch McConnell
was
announcing
like,
the floor vote. He's announcing that it'll happen.
I've got mixed feelings about that.
And we're going to talk about that. Cody's prepared a whole section.
Oh, no, I just.
Or pieces of a section. I don't know what he's prepared. Where we're going to talk about what happens next. But I do think that I'm going to sing a couple of Ruth's praises here now in memoriam. You know, she fought tirelessly for gender equality under the law. She battled sexism in her own life and career. She juggled motherhood and caring for her cancer-stricken husband while they were both still in law school. I mean, this one is amazing. She was raising kids. She was doing her own coursework. She was typing up his papers all while he was sick. Mm-hmm. As a Supreme Court justice, you know, became a role model for female identifying people, I should say. She was the first in her class at Columbia Law School. She was the first person on both the Columbia and Harvard Law Reviews. She was the second female professor at Rutgers and championed equal pay while she was there. She co-founded the first law journal on women's rights. She co-founded the Women's Rights Project at ACLU. Before she was a justice, she argued 6 cases before the Supreme Court and won 5 of them. During this time, she solidified what became as her like signature approach of combating sexism by bringing lawsuits on behalf of men who were being untreated unequally because of their sex. Basically, the thinking here was that male judges would appreciate the injustice in a case where men were the victims, but then she would like set the precedent for addressing the sexism that women suffered, which is
brilliant. Well, yeah, I mean, sexism is it affects everybody, and that's the point.
It's hard to get men to realize that. It's wild. I mean, before anybody was thinking of these things, she's one of only 4 Supreme Court justices in history, but the first one that was Jewish. And just the impact of her work in the cases that, you know, she's done is seen in many facets of her life. I'm sure a lot of you have seen this is floating around, but I've compiled them just in case you've missed them. For example, she helped women earn the right to sign a mortgage without a man, the right for a woman to have a bank account without a male co-signer,
Jesus Christ. To
have a job without being discriminated based on your gender, the right for women to be pregnant and have kids and work. See, I'm getting emotional again. Sorry.
I'm crying.
That's this year for you. The right to a pension equal to her male counterparts. The right for men to receive a widower's social security benefits. The right for a woman to put her husband on her health insurance if the employer covered workers, male workers' wives, which is yet another equal rights victory. And that's just a small list of some of the stuff that she's done. I know that some of you are feeling the way I'm feeling. I see Sophia's. and you're feeling pretty disheartened by this and this moment in time. And I know you're exhausted. I'm exhausted too. People keep pointing to how Ruth Bader Ginsburg fought all her life and, you know, all of the seemingly insurmountable obstacles that she overcame. And like, okay, that's unhelpful. like what am I supposed to do? But there is an inspiration, I think, that you can find for your own personal life, you know, because the answer is that you do what you can and you keep showing up for your family and for yourself. You donate, you do mutual aid. Call your fucking senators, I guess. I don't know. Cody's going to talk more about what happens next. And I'm not trying to be overly corny here right now, but at least a percentage of our listeners is having a hard time with this. So I just wanted to put that in there.
Thank you, Kay.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ruth is an example of somebody who with so much strength that as one person, you can make such an impact for so many different people.
Yeah.
It's just wild. The types of things she had to fight about. Like, I've known for a while that there was a period of time where women couldn't have checking accounts on their own. And it was like the 70s. It's just fucking wild. How recently all that started to change.
Yeah.
The fact that somebody that she got very old and died and was alive for those fights too.
Yeah.
And that we've had to, you know, rely on one almost 90-year-old woman as our like last big hope for
it kills me. It kills me to think of somebody who knows that they're dying.
And she just
and also knows that you can't die. Thing.
She's like, everybody's going, oh, yeah, we'll be fine as long as RBG. I mean, I
Well, I hate
we'll
that.
We'll be fine. We'll be fine. As long as RBG will hold on.
But we shouldn't be in that position.
It'll be fine.
Right, the fact that all year it always makes me angry. Like, well, at least she's still kicking it. It's like, well, that's depressing.
I mean, that's fine. I have not been. I've been fucking scared as hell because she's had pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, I've hated
so
this
many
year.
Times.
This threat. Well, and
that
it comes
wedding
back
photo
to...
of her officiating that wedding without the mask is like, don't do that either. I mean, I know it didn't
happen. Yeah, what was
do,
up? Yeah, okay.
So but still,
anyway,
like,
don't always make decisions I approve of.
Well, this is good because it comes full circle back to all of my feelings remain true and like my gratitude and my grief. I'm also angry about the situation and at her for the choices that she made. And again, grief is complicated.
Yeah,
and messy
it speaks
like
to
that.
What you were talking about with your text friends and stuff of like, it is going to be an emotional reaction. Obviously, like this person who's had this impact is now gone. We have to deal with all this stuff. And we definitely live, you know, we're in like our political culture is very like hero worshipy and stuff. And, it's not necessarily always a healthy thing to do, but that's how it is. And it does affect people's lives. And of course you're going to have that reaction. And then a little while later, you said like a lot of those people were like, actually, yeah, it sucks that she didn't do this and this and this. And it's kind of waking people up to those kinds of problems. Like
it's
even
important.
The past few days I've seen people who are like, blow it up. Do this. Like, do this. Do this. It's like, well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We felt safe in Ruth's hands. We did.
I didn't feel safe, but
safer.
I felt like I had someone that had my back.
Yeah, you felt supported. Safe is the wrong word. You're right. Felt supported. And now it's like fucking Trump is going to get a third pick. Fucking Trump and fucking
maybe not.
Second,
Mitch McConnell.
Second of the past three presidents, two of them did not win the popular vote, and the most recent one gets to pick three lifetime appointments on the Supreme Court because we live in a democracy. Is the deal we've made that deal?
Yeah, not
it's
great.
It's
our
radicalizing
was
for
to
a
have
lot of
a
people.
Fair Supreme Court. An 87-year-old woman who's beaten cancer wasn't allowed to die.
Yeah.
She should have retired when she had a chance.
Well, should have retired when she had a chance.
She's
exactly.
already had cancer a couple times at that point. But yeah. She'd beaten it in the past. It just, you know, cancer comes back a lot. Anyway, we got to
take
a quick
break.
Well,
and yeah, if you beat it a couple times, be like, okay, well, maybe let's not tempt this and I'll go and like.
Third time's a charm, y'all.
But woof. Let's take a quick break.
Take a break.
And
you know what won't give you cancer?
Oh.
Cancer. Because you already got it.
Yeah, that's accurate. Although
actually,
it
probably would spread
sometimes.
And stuff.
It
so
often
well.
Gives you
yeah,
other
you
kinds
never
of
know.
Cancers.
Like, we don't want to.
Shut up, I'm not a doctor.
But you know what will give you candy?
Candy.
This.
Cool.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together.
And we are back from that break.
Full of candy now.
I feel rested.
So full of candy. During the break, we had a brief conversation about whether or not we were too jokey up top talking about RBG. And we decided we're probably not. But Robert, you said it best.
I mean, I'm fine with it. Like, there's a couple of things. Number one, just as a general rule, you should never be too reverent about people in power. Because that's not a good idea. But at the what's sad about this is the political implications of it.
Right.
It's sad for her family that she's passed on, but at the end of the day, we're talking about a woman who lived an incredibly long and full life, who died at an age when very few people live to. So I don't feel like we're not talking about like a horrible terrorist attack here. I don't think we need hushed reverence in our tones or anything. Like, again, what's sad is the political consequences of this. All people die, and she got to live a very, very long and full life. And that's wonderful for her and her family, and I'm sorry that they're gonna miss her, but like, I'm not gonna pretend like we have to, you know.
Right. I mean, I will say that, but there are, again, there are a lot of people that are hit by this, and that's okay too.
Sure, and that's totally fine.
But yeah, I think the main point that I wanted to convey is that both things can be true. You can be critical and, you know, of the system of her choices of, you know, our political leaders while also honoring the things that they did that was good, that were good. But now, Cody, you're going to talk to us about other things that happened next now. Please.
I mean, yeah, we just got to talk about
the fuckery.
What we'll do, what the fuckery is up.
What will we do?
And I think, I mean, this can be a short section. Vote. Good night, folks.
I mean, there's a lot of things you can also do other than vote, like engage in a general strike. But yeah,
In terms
of what I think is most immediately likely to have some effect, yeah, voting is a thing you should do.
Here's funniest moments. I gotta be honest.
I mean, he's not wrong. Go check your voter registration right now. But
I mean, I'm not wrong technically. What are we?
People talk about there are options right now.
No, I know. What I'm referring to when I say vote is all the senators online telling people to vote. People did vote. We voted for you. Shut the fuck up about voting in a month and a half and maybe do something. So one thing I don't think that is going to help is pointing out Republicans' hypocrisy repeatedly over and over as if that is going to matter to anybody.
Are you sure you don't want me to read this Lindsey Graham quote? I mean, to use my words against me. If there's a Republican president in 2016 and a vacancy occurs in the last year of the first term, you can say Lindsey Graham said, let the next president, whoever it might be, take that nomination. You don't want me to read that quote.
You can read it. We can read a lot of quotes. We can read Ted Cruz saying that he is open to keeping a vacancy on the Supreme Court open for 4 years under Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. We can do all the quotes. I'm going to read an Al Franken tweet from a few days ago. Every GOP senator who refused to give Garland a vote and now agrees to vote for a Trump SCOTUS nominee will forever be remembered as a monumental hypocrite, and McConnell will live in infamy as the man who destroyed the Senate and the court through his own lust for power. This is true, but who cares? It won't change anybody's mind. It doesn't shame anybody into changing their behavior. It's just saying this out loud. And not that he's a senator and can do anything about it. So, okay, thanks, Al.
I'll push back just a bit because I've seen somebody say, I agree with you. As we say on Even More News, I agree with you completely about the futility of such things. Except there is something about stating the obvious like this that is a reminder of, like, I'm not losing my mind. I've seen that argument being made. So on a personal level, I get it, but it doesn't change anything. But especially from leaders, it's unhelpful.
Well, so that's the thing. Like, I think it's a little better to, like, commiserate and be like, wow, look at the truth and reality that we can all agree on. But when it's, Dianne Feinstein just, like, tweeting about how this cannot stand and this stuff, it's like, well, what are you going to do about it? There are some things that can be done.
The people the hypocrites know that they're hypocrites.
Right. They know they don't care. We talked about this about climate change. We talked about this in regards to climate change in last week's episode. They know they're lying. They don't care. Again, it's their own lust for power. That's fine. Maybe you could practice this a little bit and actually exercise the power that you have. So it's not constantly that line from, The Good Place, where The Good Place people are like, well, we can't just do something, Michael. We're the good guys. Like, well, no, you can't just do something.
That's a really good quote.
It's a good line about a lot of things. But like, they can withhold unanimous consent, which is like there are a lot of like boring things that the Senate has in place that they can utilize to slow it down to a halt. And like grind the gears. One of the things that is technically good about our system, even though it's actually not good because it stalls so much, it's very slow. We have a very slow system in place by design. Things happen very slowly. So it's actually kind of easy to slow things down. You can hold up the federal budget and shut down the government. You can
to do right before an election, but yeah.
What else is there to do? Frustrations. Joe Biden is not going to say that we're going to pack the court. We're going to do this. We're going to do this, and so on. Like all the things that one would want him to do if he were elected down the line. Some Democrats in office are saying that we should do that, and that's good to keep saying. But also, that doesn't do anything now. It doesn't stop the actual nomination from happening. It's about 40-50 days until the election. I don't know how many days it is until the election. It's very few days. So this is going to have to be a real rush job for the Republicans to pull off. Like the advice that we see these days seems to be like, call Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney isn't going to be convinced by anyone by a phone call or a letter. And so this idea that Republicans are going to change their mind and we're going to get the votes is ludicrous. And what is all, like, similarly ludicrous, but maybe slightly less ludicrous, is that the Democrats are actually going to do something to stop it. There are small things they can do. They just evoked some, like, it's like a 2-hour rule for committees where, like, they can't, like, you can't stop proceedings to go have, like, a committee meeting if it exceeds a certain amount of time. So it's like very boring things that the Senate can do to slow things down that they're going to try to do. Pelosi was asked recently about what we could possibly do about it. And her response, like, the first part was get out and vote, which is very frustrating to hear. But the next part is that she's got arrows in the quiver that she's not going to reveal yet. I've got not a whole lot of confidence in the power of those arrows and that quiver.
No.
And what ultimately, Robert, you alluded to is that it's going to take direct action from people to stop this from happening. Because one of the other things that you can do to stop this, aside from like the procedural boring shit, is to literally stop people from being able to go into that building and do these things.
Yep.
And one of the things that I think that it's going to take, it's not just the people that need to do that. It's actual senators need to lead these protests.
Yeah.
Like, and that's something we don't really see. There was a sit-in, I think, about gun control a few years ago. And that was like the last time that like an elected official was like a part of a protest. And I don't mean like I'm marching in the march. I got the photo. Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, I mean,
see
like
folks.
Getting fucking arrested.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's the thing that is necessary, really, to stop this is direct action, and not just direct action, but direct action from people in power who can lead this kind of
so maybe
kind of
that's
action
what
to
we
stop
should
it.
Be encouraging our senators to do with
so,
our tweets.
So that's right. So that's the other thing that I wanted to sort of get at is that everyone's like, oh, we're going to protest Mitch McConnell's house. We're going to protest this place. We're going to do that. And that's like that's some good energy. That's good energy for what is being faced right now. But Mitch McConnell will not be convinced no matter how many people are on his front lawn.
He does not care.
He does not care. Yeah. Lindsey Graham is not going to be convinced by being shouted at or like getting a bunch of phone calls. There's the photo of him during Kavanaugh of a woman shouting at him from behind. And he's like smiling, adjusting his tie. It's a meme. It's very frustrating to see. But like they don't care. People that do care that can be pushed around kind of are Democrats. Democrats love being pushed around. It's
well,
how
they
fucking,
do
it's
best
what they fucking
is get
do.
Pushed.
And so what needs to happen, I would say, is that this energy, this like, we're going to protest this person energy, protest the Democratic Party to do the things that need to be done. Push them to do what needs to be done. That's where I think a lot of this energy is going to be the most useful. If you can convince actual Democrats in power who are senators to not just be like, well, if we can invoke this rule, then maybe they'll slow down. No,
what
convince
you...
them, convince them to block the doors. Convince
How about
them
the, like Susan Collins and the Chuck Grassleys. Do you think
I wouldn't say they're the type of Democrats that I'm referring to.
Okay.
Those are the people like Susan Collins is like, okay, well, I'm not going to vote for this or whoever. Like we've got like the vote count is already happening. I'm talking about maybe some people on the younger side who have a lot of passion still for what they're doing. Pushing them to lead and participate in this
yeah,
kind
absolutely.
Of action that is necessary. And I don't think they should
actually,
lead it because they're not
Collins,
going to.
I'm not sure if you were joking. She is a Republican and said that she wouldn't feel comfortable.
Right. We've already got like, okay,
but
the vote stuff.
I do not
I mean,
trust
like,
that, but I do think of her as someone that might be more susceptible than a Lindsey Graham.
Right. But like, but again, it's like not focusing on the vote aspect
I
of
agree.
It. Like, who's got
yeah.
the vote? Who's got the vote?
Saying.
There's a lot of like, well, is Romney going to do it? Maybe Rubio will say, like, whatever.
Never depend on
let's
Rubio.
Not focus on getting the vote down right now. Focus on, like, stopping it from
yes.
happening.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Yeah. I'm not telling you stop it. I'm just saying, like, generally, that should be the goal. And that's where this energy should go. I would say like that's what I like in just in reading like here's what Democrats say that they're going to do. Here's what are possibilities. I don't know. I've like rambled on a lot about like
no, I love it.
about this.
No.
I mean, that
I just love it when you urge people to disrupt the institutions of government for political.
That's what it's going to take at this point.
Yeah, no, I agree with you entirely. Yeah,
Republicans don't care. They
Trump
don't care.
Get another lifetime appointment, say. I mean, he's had, what, 200 plus?
Yeah, and Republicans are power-hungry hypocrites who will stop at nothing to continue what they've been continuing. And Democrats love getting pushed around.
They love it.
Maybe we can push them around to actually do a little bit of what the current powerful party is doing.
Cody, so you're saying don't be shocked that politicians do stuff for political gain, part one, and two, burn it down.
That's about it. That's a good... and encourage the, you know,
and vote
and vote. But yeah, encourage, use a lot of your like Lindsey Graham, how dare you energy on the people who can actually do something about it. Which also is the people, not our elected officials. So
it's hard to find, positive, hopeful paths that are short of just doing something drastic, like you're suggesting and what you're saying. I want to say, yes, call your senators. I want to give people tangible things that they can do, but I don't believe in petitions working.
Yeah.
I believe in the fact that it's feels good to put
your name on
something.
Oh, it feels great. You sign your, you're like, yeah.
I believe in the fact that there's a long list of people that say no to this and yes to this, and we sign and put our stamp on it, but it's also very
it's 2020.
Disincentivizing of actually doing something tangible.
It's been years of this shit. It's weeks before the election. Maybe like petitions and calling Lindsey Graham and leaving him a message isn't actually what's going to do it.
Yeah.
I think people are coming around to that, this sort of radicalization, like you were talking about, Katie, with like people are grieving in this text chain. But then eventually they're like, yeah, it kind of sucks that this didn't happen. Wow, our system kind of sucks. A good friend of mine whose dad has been a lifelong Republican, like very Republican, like conservative guy, is now sending, again, maybe not the most effective thing, but very, I think, hopeful, sending letters to his elected officials complaining about how they're like, bowing to fascists and Jim Jordan and like
him.
All this kind of stuff. And it's like, and like knowing that person, that's wild that they've gotten to that point.
Yeah. I'll say this. I don't know if this is even in the realm of possibility, but one thing that I've seen floated around that people talk about is, you know, expanding the Supreme Court or changing, going in and doing something to change term limits, expanding the number of justices on the Supreme Court. Curious to hear what your guys' thoughts on those, whether it's realistic, whether you think that helps.
Oh, I mean, all for these kinds of moves.
Yeah, the system sucks.
I think it's frustrating to see a lot of people like an Ed Markey or Elizabeth Warren calling for those kinds of things, and then Biden on the other side is like frustrated with them saying it. It's like, we're not going to do that. And like earlier last night he like bragged about beating the socialist, which is kind of frustrating to see.
Ooh, I hate that.
You can't say that and also say you have the most progressive platform ever. Those are you can't brag about it after say it's very frustrating. I'm not going to get into that. But
anyway,
those kinds of moves, like for sure. Say that you're going to do those things and like fire people up for those things. But again, what now? Like, this is all stuff later. This is all stuff to say like, oh, if we get the Senate, if we get the presidency, we're going to do this and this and this and this. Great. Say that you're going to do those things and actually like make it seem like you're going to commit to those things instead of this weird like conflict thing going on. But that's for later. The important things are like what to do now to stop it from happening.
On a personal level, that does feel like something that me, that our listeners, that anybody can start adopting into their way of talking about this. On a personal level, that's something that we can do to move the needle continuously towards achieving these things. Talk about that. Normalize these ideas. Mm. Put them out there. Because when they gain popularity, then they start to hold sway over politicians actually doing something. And
right, yeah.
That isn't a great feeling right now. Like, it's not comforting, but it is something that we can work towards.
It's something, yeah. If, like, there, you know, it is one of, it's one of the things. It's one of the parts of it. Again, I keep coming back to this just because it's exactly what you're talking about. Like, people coming around to, like, wow, the Supreme Court is kind of a flawed system. Wow, Electoral College kind of sucks. Like, all these things have been happening that seem in direct conflict with the idea of democracy. And that has radicalized people. And in the same way of, like, well, maybe we should do this.
Yeah.
Think about doing this down the line. Think about doing this down the line. And convincing the party to not only say them, but like try to convince people of it,
to mean them,
like I come back a lot to like Biden saying like healthcare is a human right, while at the same time like not working to guarantee healthcare to every human being in the country, which means it's not really a human right in your eyes. Like, if you think voting is a human right, you're not gonna be like, I think you should have a public option to pay for your vote. Like, well, no, you make sure everybody gets to vote, and that's what your plan is. But in that kind of way, just sort of pushing people to, like, well, say it, but also convince people of it. Because if you work to convince people of it, then they will. That's part of leadership. Leadership is convincing people that good things are good and possible.
Yeah. We have to take another quick break. Cool. Then we're going to come back and talk about more things that are not this, but related to this.
Fill up on candy, folks.
Yay.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together.
Cool.
We've talked about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We've talked about what happens next, what we do next. We haven't talked about Trump's potential picks. It's a very big deal what this means. It's a very big deal how many picks people that Trump has appointed, not just to the Supreme Court, but just to the benches in general. So I'm going to start off this section with a little quote from a Vox article. In less than 4 years as president, Trump has appointed 201 lawyers to lifetime appointments on the federal bench, including 53 to powerful seats on the United States Courts of Appeal. By contrast, President Obama appointed only 55 appellate judges during his 8 years as president. One reason for this disparity is that Senate Republicans, led by Mitch McConnell, imposed a near total blockade on appeals court confirmations during Obama's final 2 years in the White House. That meant Trump has effectively been able to fill all the appeals court vacancies that arose during his presidency, plus nearly all the vacancies that should have been filled in Obama's last 2 years in office. I guess that could have gone in the last section. But it is
great.
Daunting. Great. I'll go with great.
It's great
to see that kind of laid out all in front of us like that.
Terrifying.
And it's just, this is another quote from a different Vox article written by Ian Millhiser. In an age of legislative dysfunction, whoever controls the courts controls the country. In the past decade or so, or more precisely since Republicans took over the House in 2011, Congress has been barely functional. You can count on one hand and possibly on just on a few fingers the major legislation that has enacted. Judges, by contrast, have become the most consequential policymakers in the nation. They have gutted America's campaign finance law and dismantled much of the Voting Rights Act. They've allowed states to deny health coverage to millions of Americans. They've held that religion can be wielded as a sword to cut away the rights of others. They've drastically watered down the federal ban on sexual harassment, and that barely scratches the surface. So I say all this just to further underscore how important the role the court that judges hold in our country right now, now more than ever, probably, because our Senate, our Congress sucks.
Yeah. Nobody likes Congress. I mean, and that's how this stuff happens and crumbles, and you deteriorate faith in institutions, and by actually doing that, and you get to a point where there's political gridlock and it seems like nothing can get done, and so people gravitate towards like a strongman type who says he's going to solve all of the problems.
All comes back around to fascism with you.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that always ends well.
It always... and all things end there.
But like, I mean, that's what, like, if, you know, Republicans stopping all stopping X and Y and all this stuff while also now getting these judges and you stop progress and then you have Trump lifting them up while claiming like Congress doesn't get anything done and I'll do it. But he's the he's of the party that stopped things from being done.
Yeah.
It's just a it's a big power con and they've been doing it for a long time.
So let's talk about who this appointee might be. We don't really know yet. Obviously, Trump floated a list a couple of weeks ago that included Tom Cotton and Ted Cruz. I don't actually think that they are in contention here. We're pretty sure at this point that it's going to be a woman.
Well, he said he said he's going to pick a woman.
I say we're pretty sure because I don't know. Oh, good.
Trump's gotten
do,
woke now. That's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The summary of it all is he has several women cool on his short list, and they're all terrible and an insult to the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it's depressing. The top person on his short list was also mentioned when I Like Beer was appointed. Mm-hmm. Amy Coney Barrett would be terrifying and horrible.
Yeah, that's who they. That's who they're probably going to push the most because yeah, they
that's
know.
What I think.
Well, aside from like what she believes and would help them do, they know that she would be the one that makes the left angrier. It triggers the left the most.
She's a political choice.
Yeah, they're half of their whole approach to politics is owning the libs, and that's the one that would do it the most, and so they can laugh because they're cruel.
She's also the youngest. She's
48,
yeah. Which would be the youngest Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, but well, yeah. I mean, fake. It's the fake woke thing is very funny. Because let's get a woman in there who will not defend women's rights.
I think we all know that just because someone's a woman doesn't mean that they're good.
I hope so.
It's pretty terrifying, the whole thing.
She's quoted. Quoted to say, "The fundamental element that the woman has a right to choose abortion will probably stand." She added, "The controversy right now is about funding. It's a question of whether abortions will be publicly or privately funded."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that's it. I'm sure that's the only thing.
Yeah, she also led a 3-woman panel of judges that said Purdue University may have discriminated against a male student accused of sexual assault when he was suspended for a year. A punishment that she sided with him because he was suspended for a year, which made him ineligible from getting a spot in the Navy. And she said, "It's plausible that university officials chose to believe Jane because she is a woman, and to believe John because he is a man, and disbelieve John because he is a man."
Traitor! She's a goddamn traitor.
I know. She's terrifying.
Well, I mean, the way they talk about
his top
like,
choice.
I mean, yeah, they want to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's what they want to do. That is their plan.
They want to overturn the separation of church and state.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
Feels like we're kind of running out of steam about talking.
I'm very upset.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, here's a list of all the people, and you don't even have to go through the list to be like, well, it's not good. and no one's been officially picked yet. And again, it's
one
like,
of those
it's not
that
even
we cross
like,
when we get there, but
right. And like, it's again, it's like, well, it's not. The important thing is just to stop the nomination process and stuff.
It doesn't
that
really even
happening.
Matter who it is that he puts forward. We know what they're going to stand for. We know that what they're going to try to do. Not that I believe that Trump cares about these things, but he knows that's how he gets elected.
No. And like, I mean, even and Ted Cruz has already given up some of the game, too, and talking about how like we need them because, you know, if the contested election, we're going to need a full court to decide that. Trump had a quote that I'm going to pull up to his rally about we're going to have a victory on November 3rd, the likes of which you've never seen. Now we're counting on the federal court system to make it so that we can actually have an evening where we know who wins, not where the mm-hmm. votes are going to be counted a week later or 2 weeks later or and so on. So it's very clear, like that's it's all part of it. It's all part of their goal. And it would be great if the opposition party opposed
it would
and
be
resisted
great if the
effectively.
Opposed.
I hope they don't do a couple of photo ops and how dare you, sirs, and then it, let it happen anyway.
That point about the election night, thank you for bringing that up. I was thinking about that earlier, is one of the most terrifying about it, because as we already know, it's terrifying in so many ways, because it's a reminder of what a shit show it is going to be. The fight mm-hmm. of election night, when we know that so many of these votes are going to be trickling in, that they're mail-in ballots. We know that the election will be impossible to call on election night at this point, most likely, unless everybody's already sent their ballots in.
Well, right. That's the other, like, in talking about the election, it's the scary part, the very frustrating thing is that it's going to be a shit show no matter what. The only scenario where it's not a complete shit show is if Joe Biden wins by a landslide. If it's clearly an overwhelming landslide, then it's going to be what you're talking about.
By what you're talking about, you mean sweet, right?
Yeah, it's going to be sweet.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure.
Can't wait.
It'll be the worst night of the worst year ever.
Oh, we don't know about that.
There's still more year after that. Got 2 months. Yeah. 2 months later. Who knows? I mean.
Guys, let's end this on a different kind of a vibe note. Tell me something good.
Tell me something good.
You know, my fingers almost healed.
That's really good.
That actually is really good news.
From when that fascist broke it with a baton.
Yeah, fuck that fascist.
And I have real fun new armored gloves coming in the mail that I'm excited about. They're made out of license plates.
Very cool.
Rust? Video game Rust?
Yes, Cody. That's what I have to do for my life now. I'm also in the process of armoring my raincoat. Things are
you're prepared
real
for
cool.
everything.
Yeah.
I mean, the neat thing about life in 2020 is that a sizable chunk of the things that I thought, like, wouldn't that be neat when I was a kid reading cyberpunk novels? Like a lot of that's happened. It just turns out that I actually hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been
that's
conditioned,
growing up, you know.
By films for decades and decades to not only expect a dystopia, but to kind of embrace a dystopia.
Yeah.
But it turns out dystopias suck. They're dystopic.
Cody, you share something good.
Oh, Robert's finger's getting a lot better.
That's amazing. That is nice. I love to hear it.
Katie, what's something good that happened to you or is happening?
What's something good that's happened or is happening? You'd think I would have prepared an answer since I started this line of questioning. lots of good things are happening every day. No, I think I've convinced my mom to come. I'm going to rent an Airbnb for my mom to come stay in and be near me for a little bit.
That's nice.
I have a little bit of reservations about it because she's in a pretty COVID-free area. But we'll just hang out inside and get tested if she does that. And you know, that's a really nice and comforting thought to me right now that I'm looking forward to very much.
At the very least, it's a comforting thought.
That's
nice too.
It's something to work towards. And it's kind of like, how adjusting to how you have a family during this time. And it's, you know, I normally wouldn't do that, but I think maybe that's the best way to sneak in some quality time. And I need it. I need my mom.
We all need our moms.
Whoever your mom may be, whatever form your mom takes.
Yeah.
Oh, I actually, this I'll keep brief.
Oh, you've got great news.
Well, I've got nice news, I guess. Well, it's less news. It's just like, oh, that's a little hopeful. I got a message today on Twitter from somebody who talked about how they were raised in the same sort of indoctrination as Ben Shapiro or Ted Cruz. And their personal distaste for like Trump as a person led him to watching videos and consuming a lot of these things and like the news show that we do. And he's like radicalized, I guess, now.
Yay!
That's great news. That's not the news I thought you were going to share, but that's great.
No, I mean, I mean, personal news. I try to not do personal news online that much. So I think you're alluding to the actual really good news, which is that I'm an uncle now, and the baby is adorable. And
so cute.
Oh, congratulations, Cody.
It's fantastic. He's a lucky child who's going to have some wonderful parents to be raised by.
Which of my names is your brother giving to the baby?
He's Reverend.
The child after me,
the
right?
Reverend is his name.
Yeah, the Reverend. The That's
Reverend.
A good name.
The Reverend Johnston.
His first name is The. His middle name is Reverend.
Yeah. I look forward to when he's in the DMV and they call really Reverend, funny. Comma, The.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's going to be very
and
funny.
Sophie, I think I know your news. You're getting a new present tomorrow.
Oh, I was going to say that my Republican father said he will not be voting for Donald Trump.
That's much better.
That's really good news.
I've been working on that for, since
4 years.
Day.
Yeah.
Every 4 years, every day. Yeah. And he said, I mean, he's not going to vote for him. And that means a lot to me.
I think your news and Cody's message are a really great way to wrap this up.
And yes, I do get a sofa tomorrow.
Yes, she's also getting a sofa tomorrow. But our conversations matter on a personal level. Your actions matter. They have trickling out effects.
Yeah, people aren't lost.
If
you think they're lost, they're not.
You know, I'm hoping that we've reached enough people, but we clearly are reaching people. All of us. You guys, the listeners, you know, and I'm proud of you. It's fucking hard. And I don't know when it's going to get better, but
we'll get through it together.
It doesn't get better unless we keep doing it. Yes, or not. Anyway, I'm done being a sap. We're going to play us out now.
Just quoting it.
You can follow Katie on Twitter and Instagram at Katie Stoll. You can follow Cody on Twitter and Instagram at Dr. Mr. Cody. You can follow Robert on Twitter at I Write Okay. You can follow us at Where's Your Pod. We have a T Public store.
Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel.
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.